Okay, Parshat Re'eh. Parshat Re'eh actually boasts of the whole second half being something that the final third of Parshat Re'eh being something that in Chutz Lartz we're very, very familiar with. It's an interesting anomaly in Eretz Yisrael, not at all. Because the last third of Parshat Re'eh, which is from the middle of Perek Yudal until the end of the Parsha, is something that is read in Chutz Lartz on the eighth day of Pesach. It's read in the shortened form if it's during the week, but like the last 2 years when it was on Shabbat, we had the longer form, Aser Ta'aser. It's read on the second day of Shavuot. Again, same thing, the short form during the week, but on when second day of Shavuot's on Shabbat, the longer form. And the longer form is always read on Shmini Atzeret. In Eretz Yisrael, we never read it, except for Parshat Re'eh. Because the seventh day of Pesach is it, B'shalach. Shavuot's one day, B'chodesh HaShlishi. And Shmini Atzeret is V'zot HaBrachat, Simchas Torah. Right? So it's one of these kind of curious pieces. But I want to take a look at a passage that is before it, although it may have some impact on it. Re'eh is, as I presented last year, 2 years ago really, is the development, Moshe Rabbeinu's expounding and expansion on the Aseret HaDibrot. And we saw that like the beginning of Vayetchanan and Ekev are focused around the Dibrot of Anochi and Lo Yelecha because they focus on Avodah Zarah. The beginning of Re'eh continues that and then it moves on to Shem Hashem. Because Lo Tisa'at Shem Hashem, that's not enough. Moshe Rabbeinu explains there's also the Makom HaSheivchar Hashem, the Shaken Shmo Sham, and the two issues kind of bleed over. Avodah Zarah and Kvod Shem Hashem continue to sort of interact. We have all these halachot of a Navi for Avodah Zarah and a Mesit to Avodah Zarah and a Nonir Nidachat. And then subsequently, the end of the parsha, the part that we're familiar with, really is, in a sense, an expansion on the Dibra about Shabbat because it goes through the seasons. And the idea of Shemitah and the idea of a Shabbat for Avadim, they work 6 years on the seventh year, they go free, and then the Regalim. In the middle, we have this section that you have on the handout as section Aleph, which is actually, in the way we divide it up, it's one whole Aliyah, it's the fourth Aliyah. And it begins, Banim atem la'adonai lo'echem, lo tidkoredu v'lo tasimu korcha ben erechem lamet, ki am kadosh ata adonai lo'echem, v'cha b'char adonai lo'yodol am skulam mikolim asher p'nei adama. And then there's a list of, that's very familiar to us, a list of those animals, fish, and birds that we're allowed to or not allowed to eat, depending on what the nature of the list is, which is familiar to us because we heard it already in Parshat Shemini. Kinda, sorta, not exactly. And the last pasuk, which I made larger again, is a pasuk that shows up with slight variations in three places in the Torah, Mishpatim in Kitisa, not in Shemini, but here, which is the prohibition against eating a nevelah, but the fact you could sell it or give it to a non-Jew, a ger or toshav or a goy, right? And then the end of it, of course, famously, is lotva shel gdi v'chalei v'imo, and that's the end of the aliyah. Right? By the way, every time that shows up, it's an end of an aliyah, just a reminder. So this interspersion in the middle of the development of Hamakom HaSheivchar Hashem and the prohibition against Avodah Zarah on the one hand, and then the expansion of the calendar and the development of the Shnat HaMaaser and the Shnat HaShmitah, Shmitah Ksafim, and the 6 years for the Eved, etc., then going to the Regalim, it's kind of a weird piece in the middle. But the thing I want to focus on is just the first four words. Banim Atem L'Adonai Elohechem. What does that mean? What does that mean?
We're all sons of God.
Right. So when Moshe talks to Bnei Yisrael and says, you're all sons of Hashem. Okay? A nice statement. What it's doing here is not exactly clear, because it's a statement that could be made anywhere, certainly anywhere in Moshe's speech, and it's the only place that that particular phrase is made. But what follows it is even stranger. Because you would think, Banim Atem L'Hashem Elokechem, and then, V'havta L'Recha Kamocha. Or Banim Atem L'Hashem Elokechem, V'havta At Hashem. Something about the relationship either between you and each other or between you and Hashem. Instead, you get Lotit Godadu, V'lotasimu Korcha Ben Enechem Lamet. Now, Lotit Godadu is widely understood, and everybody seems to accept this as pshat, as, and this is the way it's halachically learned, as the prohibition against cutting yourself in response to a death in the family. common custom, and we're familiar with it also from the Nevi'im. If you recall, in that very famous story of Eliyahu and Har Carmel, when he has the God off with the Nevi'i HaBaal, and he has them go first, and they're praying, and they're doing all of their whatever they're doing in order to try to get heavenly fire to come down and consume the animal. He makes fun of them, and he says, you better call louder, perhaps he's on a walk, perhaps he's sleeping. Very cute. And then, vaygodedu kimishpatam, it says they cut themselves, birmachim, which was spears or something, as was their custom. So in other words, it was a pagan custom to do this. There was part of a prayer ritual. Here it seems to be connected to mourning because of the connection, lo tasimu korcha ben enechem lameit. Korcha ben enechem would mean to have some sort of a bald spot. Sort of picture of Far Eastern monks. I mean, a bald spot at one particular place on the head as a sign of mamet. Okay? So what everybody, who's anybody, has raised their hands and says, I don't get what the connection within the pasuk is. And forget about the larger question, which is, why is Banim Atem Lashem in the middle of this parsha? What's the connection within the pasuk? All right? So we have many psukim, especially if you think about it in Parshat Kedoshim, a little bit in Parshat Mishpatim and Parshat Kedoshim, where there is a particular mitzvah given, and Parshat Bahar also, and then there's some sort of an explanation given to that mitzvah, why we're obligated to follow that mitzvah. So, for instance, Lifnei Iver Lo Titem Yishol, Lo Tekal Cheres, Lifnei Iver Lo Titem Yishol, V'yarei Tamei Elohecha Ani Adonai. So there's some sort of a motivation there, you know, even though nobody else sees you, God sees you, right? Or, and there's some sort of a symbiotic connection between the two. In that case, the famous drasha that even if your parents tell you to chalal Shabbat, you're not. So when we have these various items together in a pasuk, either one is explaining the other, or else one is balancing the other, or one is sort of a symmetrically related to the other. For instance, at mikdashi tirau v'chabtatai tishmor mikdashi tirau. So that led to the famous notion of Shabbat as sort of a mikdash in time relative to the mikdash, which is a mikdash in space, and that whole sort of symbiotic or symmetrical relationship. So then we come back to our pasuk, and I kind of wonder, why does it say, Banim Atem Lashem, all right, and then Lotzit Godedu? How are the two related to each other? Okay, so if you take a look on the back, you will see that I listed Shesh Gishot. Shesh Gishot meaning six different approaches, but you will see that there's a paucity of sources. There's not a paucity of sources. There's anything but. However, you'll see why I put six. All right, so we start, of course, start with Rashi. How does Rashi explain this connection of Lotit Godedu, Banim Atem, Lotit Godedu? So first Rashi explains what Lotit Godedu is. Again, cutting yourself, right? And he says the following: Lo titnu gedida v'seret bivsarchem. Don't put a cutting in your flesh. Al mate when somebody dies. Kederach shahamori amorim osin. This is a Canaanite pagan custom. You avoid it. And now he's just explaining what Lo titnu gedida is. How does this connect with Banim Atem? Lefi shatem banav shamakom. You are God's children. So what? Since you are God's children, you have to look nice and respectable and well-kempt and groomed. You represent God. So you represent God, you can't be walking around all cut up and all damaged like that. Right? Which, by the way, assumes several things. It assumes something in general about comportment, which is that a person, as part of being B'no Shel Hashem, should, in general, be well-groomed and well-dressed and look kempt and look like a dignified person. Okay. The second thing is that there's something inherently unkempt about this, which I think the pagans would probably disagree about, because they say, well, this is part of our religious custom. So, you know, it's part of what we do. So Rashi's answer would then be, yes, but given that we're not going to do it in that because of that fashion, so now it just looks like somebody who's looking terrible, and you're a child of Hashem, you should not be dressed that way, not look that way. That's answer number one. What? So Rashi, therefore, would not make that distinction, right? In other words, Rashi would say, yes, the motivation for somebody cutting themselves would be death, and perhaps the makot would only come if it was a response to death. But the reason for the mitzvah is not about the what caused you to cut yourself, but the very fact of being cut. You should not walk around looking like a terribly unkempt, person, all cut up and bleeding and torn clothes and all that kind of stuff. You're a child of God.
Can I ask a question?
Right? Sure. You are someone unkempt. Exactly. Right. And so, therefore, by the way, the Gemara says an interesting thing. Mekarin al hamet. It's a fascinating statement, because you think about it, and you think about kriya as an, I'll explain it later, you think about kriya, tearing clothes, as an inherently Jewish custom.
We're not
right?
shaving.
It's not, what?
We're not shaving.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about the kriya. You have to remember, shaving also is a very different thing today. I mean, we still don't shave, but it's a very different thing today than in a society in which people shave typically once a week. You know what you would look like, right? But as far as kriya goes, we think of kriya as such an inherently Jewish thing that when we observe people who are, let's say, less than fully observant at a funeral, typically it happens with a family like most of our families that have some non-observant family members, and they do this little ribbon thing that they cut, and we say, that's not real kriya. Real kriya is like this. But the Gemara goes in the opposite direction. The Gemara says, "Mekarin al mamet ve'enu midarkei amori," which means, don't think it's a goyish custom. It's okay, it's a Jewish custom, right? By the way, if you look in Tanakh, you see kriyat al mamet was something that was universal. Everybody, when they, not just for dead, for bad news, they would rend their clothes, right, as a sign of like the world being broken. Yeah, Jason.
I've read, unless you said before, the marking on your head is connected to this look of dignity.
It could be. Rashi's take on it is of dignity, which means, by the way, again, that Rashi, although may have to say halachically that the makot you would get for violating the law in the Torah would only be al hamet, that's a discussion in Masech and Makot, but that the problem is a problem that exists at any time, the way he's describing it. Ibn Ezra comes along. We're going pretty much in... with one skip here, we're going pretty much in chronological order. The Ibn Ezra turns around and says the following. V'tam bani, look on the second line. Achar shetedu shatem bani. It's a fascinating statement. But I want you to notice that everybody here is concerned with the following. What is the connection between bani matem and loti godedu? How does the fact that you're Hashem's children inform the fact that you shouldn't cut yourself over the dead? So Rashi's take is, you should never cut yourself. You should never look that way. Okay? Maybe someone can borrow them. Okay? It says, Achar shetedu shatem banim l'Hashem, hu hev etchem yoter me'ha'av la'ben. In other words, you know that Hashem is your father, and he loves you more than any parent could love a child. Al titkodedu al kol ma she'aseh. Now, al kol ma she'aseh now means death is the extreme, but on anything. In other words, don't get too worked up about anything bad that happens. Now, there's something very consoling about this, and something that seems a little bit harsh about this, but here's the whole statement. He kol asher yaseh letovu. Anything that God does is ultimately for the good, because he loves you. And therefore, no matter how painful and difficult it may feel, take that into account, and therefore the bani matem should prevent you from lotit godudu. Now, lotit godudu is not about appearance, it's about reaction. And it's about saying, your reaction should never be so overwhelmed or so drowning in sorrow that you would do something like that to yourself, because you should always take into account that that there must be some good in it, or it's for the best, right? Which, of course, is a very, very difficult thing to say. It's something no person in their right mind would ever say to a person in yeshiva or to a person who's just suffered a loss.
Well, it's the same impulse as Baruch Dayan Emet.
Baruch Dayan Emet's a little different. Baruch Dayan Emet is saying you're a true judge, which means this is a really hard thing, a real difficult thing. I know you judge truthfully, and that's different than saying it's all good. All right? And that's why we have Al HaTov Ve'al HaRa'ah. The Mishnah talks about Al HaRa'ah. But this is the way the Ibn Ezra explains it. All right? Ve'im lo tivinuhu kasher lo yavinu abanim haktanim maseh avihem rak yismechu alav. Just like little kids don't understand when their parent does something. You know, a little kid doesn't get it when their parent grabs them and pulls them from running in the street. They get much, much older and they understand, you saved my life. Or when the parent does some sort of disciplinary action which will teach the kid to never put his hand on a stove, right? That sort of thing. The kid doesn't get it, and the kid's upset, but if you think about it, well, it was my parent, they obviously mean the best for me, so they won't get that upset about it. Kein tasu gam atem, ki am kadosh ata. Now, the second half of the pasuk comes in here. Rashi didn't attach this, but the Ibn Ezra attaches the larger view, which is not only, remember, look at the first two psukim on the front side, banim atem, don't do all that stuff, and then ki am kadosh ata, you're a sanctified nation. So what's the takeaway of the sanctified nation component? He says, "Ve'encha kishar kol ha'kananim." You're not like the rest of the Kananim who live here. Alkein lo tasei kemaaseihem. Meaning, Am Kadosh Ata says, because you could turn around and say, well, everybody's children of God. And God does is the father of all humanity. And therefore, anything that happens to anybody, they shouldn't act that way. So you could turn around and Rashi would say, no, that's not relevant. Because we have a particular place in the world. Ibn Ezra would say, Enochinami, you're right. Except they don't get it. It's very different. According to Ibn Ezra, it would be a take of, we are Nam Kadosh, Hashem selected us, because Hashem selected us, we have this heightened awareness of this, and therefore we have to not allow our emotions to carry us so far that it seems as if that we don't get that. Right? Or that we don't have that kind of trust. Ibn Ezra. Now, by the way, the fact, and this is what's really, I think, one of the most inherently beautiful things about Limud HaTorah is a book called Mikra Gedolot. What's Mikra Gedolot? It's what they call the Rabbi's Bible. Right? You open up a Chumash, and what do you see? You see four words, five words, maybe a whole Pasuk, and then, what? Tons of commentaries. Why are they all there? Because none of them agree with each other. Because if they did, they wouldn't be there. The Ramban never says, Ken Katav Rashi Yafem Miyod Shkoyach. He says, Rashi, Aval, right? And then Katav Rabbi Avram, and then the Ramban gives his own opinion. The Ramban always starts by quoting Rashi, but he doesn't end with that. And you got the Ibn Ezra from his take, and the Rashbam saying, that's what my grandfather says, but I disagree. And we got this wide tent. And of course, one of the frustrating questions that you get often in middle school kids often is, well, who's right? Who's right? It's not even a relevant question. There's a lot of different ways to understand what this pasuk is. Halachically, that's a different question. But as far as parshanut goes, as far as understanding what it means, there's a wide range, and often the statement is as much, the comment is as much a statement about who the parshan is as how much he understands it, or where he's coming from. But the Ramban turns around and has a different take. Look at source 3. Gamzu mitzvah mevuerat. Now that links up with what the Ramban said in his introduction to his commentary to Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim, there's a brief intro here. Sefer Dvarim is a huge conundrum. Because unlike the first four Sfarim, in which Hashem plays a role as a first person and speaks to us, or Hashem says to Moshe, tell Bnei Israel the following that I've said. Sefer Dvarim is all presented as Divrei Moshe. And the Gemara says that. The Gemara distinguishes between the rest of the Torah and Dvarim in both ways. It regards it as Moshe mipi atzmo, famous statement of Abaye, Moshe speaking on his own. And in which case, why is it canonized? It's canonized because Hashem said, Shkoyach, good gezogt. Because, you know, of course, Hashem really speaks Yiddish, right? Hashem, good gezogt, right? And putting the gushpanka, but not that it was originally, or that it's somehow Moshe speaking, but, you know, in sort of a different format. But everybody understands, Chazal from A to Z understand that Sefer Dvarim is to be dealt with differently. By the way, Chazal understand literary orientation of Dvarim differently than the rest of Torah. And therefore, for instance, Rabbi Yehuda, who rejects Smuchim, the idea that if two laws are next to each other in the rest of the Torah, that's meaningful. In Dvarim, he says it is meaningful. Because Dvarim is a speech. It's an organized speech. But if things are in order in a particular sequence, that's for a reason. So the Ramban, who has contend like everybody else with the nuances and differences of Sefer Dvarim, the Ramban in his introduction talks about the mitzvot in Dvarim. And so some of the mitzvot in Dvarim are clarifications of earlier mitzvot, and some of them are new mitzvot. Okay, so for instance, you have the mitzvah tzitzit and kitetze, which is a clarification and expansion on the mitzvah in Bamidbar that we have. So he says, Gam zu mitzvah mevueret. Mitzvah mevueret means the Ramban is claiming, Banim atem, and what follows, is not new. It's not new. So please tell me where in the first four Sfarim you ever find a prohibition to cut your hair when somebody dies. To cut, shave it or rip it out or cut yourself. Okay, the answer is you do, but not exactly. Why? Shamar b'Torah b'Kohanim. Nachon, Mike? Right? In Pashat, Emor, okay? Lo yikruchu kochav v'rosham. V'saram l'shutu saratet. So in Vayikra, the Kohanim are told that they have to behave a certain way and with a certain level of Kedusha, not become Tamei Lameit. Notice that, not become Tamei Lameit. And they can't do all this cutting and stuff when somebody dies. So now what's happening? Moshe explaining. It's not just because Kohanim are so hoich, are so high and so sanctified that that's the case. Now that's a very interesting pick. I want you to listen to that phrase again that the Ramban uses. Who's the Ramban quoting? Korach. He's quoting Korach. Which means that the Ramban is claiming to some extent that Sefer Dvarim is reflective of a minimal acceptance or minimal correctness of Korach's argument. Minimal. Not complete, of Korach's argument, and that therefore what happens is certain laws that apply only to the Kohanim are expanded and broadened now to apply to everybody. So whereas Kohanim, we would think of the select class. Here's the Yam, it's a bunch of fighters, a bunch of warriors and their families, and here's this select class of really only three people, Aaron and whichever two sons happen to be alive at the time. Now the Ravi, when they're gone, then Allah's ready to take their place, never the four of them. So those three, there are priests, and they have special laws. Right, and they'll have more kids, but it's always going to be a very small group. Suddenly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns around and says, you're all that way. So what's the Banim Atem? The Banim Atem is now a promotion. They're going to promote it to being from Am Hashem to Bnei Hashem. Okay? Chulchem Banim Adonai Lechem Kamo HaKohanim Kein Shemru Gam Atem Mitzvah Hazot Kamo Tam. So Ramban is not connected with fine grooming that is appropriate for a child of Hashem. The Ramban does not connect it with your attitude towards loss, which is the Ibn Ezra, but rather he makes it a very straightforward statement, which is that you're basically, the Torah is expanding the laws of the Kohanim to all of Bnei Israel now. Which, by the way, just going back to Korach for 1 minute, Parshat Korach is immediately after Shlach. What's the very last thing in Parshat Shlach? Parshat Tzitzit, right? Now, you're a member of Bnei Israel, and you hear that everybody's supposed to put tzitzit on their garments. Tzitzit. You ever hear that word before? If you're in the Midbar, you certainly have, because you heard that there's one person by the name of Aaron who's going to wear a tzitz. So Korach's argument makes a lot of sense. Kol heidaku am kadoshim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just gave us a mitzvah where everybody's a kohen gadol. Kilu. And that's the famous Tanchuma about Korach and his Eidah with the tzitzit. You know, they all came out with Beget Shikol Tchelet and challenged Moshe. It's part of the tie-in. Sorry for the pun. It was deliberate. Okay. Lesforno. Rabbeinu Avad Yesforno. Right? 15th century Livorno. Banim atem la'adonai lechem lo titko to do. He says something which sounds like the Ibn Ezra, but it's different. He says something that sounds like the Ibn Ezra. Watch what he says. She'ein ra'ui laharot tachlit ha'da'aga v'hatsa'ar al ha'karov ha'meit. When you think about what that means, what is kriya? Kriya is symbolic of terrible loss. Now, many people around the table, like myself, have torn kriya in the past. Right? I've torn kriya four times. Brother died, father died, my mother died, my rabbi died. Now, what kind of kriya is it? Well, the reality is that if you have a relative who's perhaps fairly distant, or perhaps was very old and had been sick for a long time, the kriya is very different than the kriya for a parent you've been taking care of day in, day out. Or kriya for somebody who tragically is killed below eight, you know, in tragic circumstances. It's a very different kind of kriya. In one sense, the kriya is sort of like a sense of finality. In other, it's a sense of destruction of everything. My whole world's been destroyed. Sforno was talking about that. He says it's inappropriate to demonstrate and act out as if my entire world has been destroyed when I have a greater relative still alive. Listen to what he says. Malal v'tikva tov l'fichach atem banim l'ashem shu avichem kayam la'ad ein ra'ish tidagu v'telegu l'tachlit ad shu ha'shum meit. You should never be totally overwhelmed. This is probably a word he means, he would say in English. Overwhelmed by sadness. And by a sense of tragedy with the loss of one of your loved ones when the biggest loved one is here forever. right? Which, again, is similar to the Ben Ezra, but it's not the same, because here he's talking about that particular relationship. Not that I trust that whatever God does is for the good, but the fact is, I'm not all alone. I'm not all alone. And then he continues, and notice he says, you should also not feel too sad for what the mate is undergoing. What does that mean? In other words, his take on it, and this is part of Sforno's anthropology, which is something that pops up many times in his commentary, his understanding of what the mindset of 2,500 years earlier, 2,800 years earlier, is that kriya was both a sense of absolute devastation and identification with the turmoil that the mate is undergoing. So he says, absolute devastation you don't have because God's still here. God's here forever. And identification with the turmoil that the mate is undergoing, am kadoshata. And if you're an Am Kadosh, that means you got Olam Haba. That means your mate is going to Olam Haba. And you don't need to feel that sort of devastation. Which, by the way, within our literature, there's a whole range of different opinions about how that plays out. The famous Rabbeinu Tam, not to eat Shalosudas with Timnuch HaMariv, not to drink water then, because that's when the Meitim are getting their last bit of water before they go back to Yanim for the week. It's a lot of very interesting material, but he takes a different take. He said, since, and he says, that's why Am Kadoshata. Why mention Am Kadosh? Do I mention the two things? So, according to the Ramban, Am Kadoshata is to say, you're all Kohanim. According to the Sforno, Am Kadoshata is, you don't need to worry about the second half of things, which is about the turmoil of the dead, because I'm Kadosh. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is that all four of these comments, we're going to wind this up soon, all four of these comments have one thing in common, because they really stretch. You think about the stretch between Rashi and the Sforno is wide. Is the one thing they have in common is they look at the pasuk in isolation. Now, I raised the question before, what's this whole parsha doing here at all? In other words, you want to explain why Banim Atam Lashem leads to Lo Tidgodu, fine. But then you got a bigger problem, which is, what's this whole parsha doing here? Comes along the Chizkuni, that's why I put him last, even though he's actually earlier than the Sforno. The Chizkuni, Chizkiah ben Manoach in Provence in the 13th century, says the following thing. And he puts it in connection to the Parsha. Turn back and take a look at Parsha Bet. Parsha Bet immediately precedes our Parsha. What's Parsha Bet about? So it's a good trivia quiz. It's one of the three halachot in the Torah that, at least according to one opinion in Chazal, never happened and never will happen. What's the most famous thing that Lo haya v'lo nivra v'lo atid liot? Ben Sar Mora. That's one opinion. Then Rabbi Yochanan says, I sat on his grave. What? Irani Dachat and Bayit Menugah. Rabbi Lezer and Bayit Menugah, the Tzarath in the house. So, Irani Dachad was an opinion in Masachat Sanhedrin whether it ever happened, but the Parsha of Irani Dachad involves really wiping out an entire town. So and that's immediately before Bani Matem. So the Chizkuni says, take a look at the juxtaposition. There's a reason for it here. Watch what he says. Nismachan, number 5 at the bottom. Nismacha Parsha Zulikan, Lazir Shaloit go to do. In other words, maybe, and this takes us back to the Egel. Remember in the Egel, what did Moshe say? The people would be killing their own family who were involved in the Egel. Maybe when you went ahead and did what you were commanded, you ended up killing or seeing the death of a family relative. Says Banim Atem Lashem Elokeichem. What's the connection? L'fichach lo tidgudu amashi yaralachem afilu encha mevin madua yaralacha kach. Don't be that sad about stuff, even if you don't understand it. Ela smoch alav ki kol masav shal kodesh baruch hu letovah. This is exactly like the Ibn Ezra, and now he's looking at the connection. What's the connection between your reaction to the mate and the Yirani Dachat? It's because the Yirani Dachat, you may have actually seen the death of somebody who's close to you, right? Which, by the way, would then put this whole piece in a different light. Now it's about sort of seeing the death of the close one within the larger picture, not of God's actions, but rather of national weal, of national welfare. Which, of course, is a very difficult thing. And then he says, and why Am Kadosh? He at the bottom he says, Ve'encha roshai l'navel atzmecha. That goes back to Rashi. Since you're an Am Kadosh, you can't degrade yourself and make yourself look all terrible. Okay. But I promised Shesh Kishot. Right? Here's five. And the truth is that they're close. The Ibn Ezra is kind of close to the Sfarno, and the Chizkuni borrows from Rashi and sounds a little bit kind of like the Ibn Ezra in another case. Right? There's some bleeding over. But the larger question of why Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokechem is situated right here. So turn the page one more time and look at the last paragraph. The last paragraph is a selection. It's all in order, but it's just with a lot of ellipses. A selection from what comes immediately after Bani Matem. We looked at what came before, which is Yoni Dachat. Look what happens right afterwards. Right after Bani Matem comes Aser Ta Aser. You bring your Masrot. And by the way, when you bring your Masrot to Yerushalayim, what does Zohar command you? Don't ignore the poor. Don't ignore it. And who are the famous four poor all throughout Devarim? They make their starring appearance in Parshat Re many times. Hayatom, Almana, Hager, V'Halevi. People who just don't have land. They don't have wherewithal. So when you come to Yerushalayim to celebrate the Makom HaShevcha Hashem, the place that Hashem chooses, to celebrate with the bounty that God blessed you with, make sure to include the Levi. Don't leave him alone. What's the next Parsha? Take a look here in Gimel. After 3 years, you have to bring out all of your Masrot. And you have to give it to whom? The Ger, the Yatom, the Almanah, and the Levi. Good. What's next? Every 7 years you have Shemitah Kesafim. And what's the concern when Shemitah Kesafim is going to happen? Therefore, you may not want to do what? Lend money to the poor because you're afraid you think they're canceled. Penya Davar Levavchab Liyal. That's the pasuk that, of course, led to Hillel's famous prose bowl. And then what happens next? What's the next parsha? And by the way, this is in sequence. What's the next parsha? The next parsha is the parsha of Evid Ivri. You have an Evid who comes to work for you. You have to let him go. And I don't let him go after 7 years. You have to send him away with a big tip. And it's something to get started with. Right? You have to enable him to get started on his own. What do all these things have in common? They have one thing in common. And that is, you got to take care of each other. And those among you who are fortunate and blessed have an obligation to take care of the ones who are not fortunate and have not been blessed. So whether it's the Levi who has to be taken care of when you come to the place that Hashem chooses and you give him from your Masrot, whether it is Maser Ani that's given in the third year and the sixth year, whether it is lending money to somebody who needs it, or whether it's even an Eved Ivri who's kind of descended to this low position, you have to honor him, Tov Lo Imachi, you have to treat him like an equal in your own house, and then when he leaves, and you have to make sure he doesn't stay more than 6 years, take a look at Yirmiyahu Lamedal to see what happens when you do, and then you send him away, you have to give him lots of stuff. And lots of gift. And Mishnah Schar Sakhir, understand, he worked double hard for you. Whatever Mishnah Schar Sakhir may mean. Right? Lots of different approaches. So maybe Bani Matem is actually a caption for this whole section, which is, what is, and many of us are parents, what is the greatest nachat that we get? The greatest nachat we get. You may be scratching your heads for a second, I'll say it, and then you'll nod your head. When our kids play nice together, or put it in a bigger fashion, when our kids take care of each other. And it becomes, when you get older and your kids become adults, it becomes a bigger issue, because when one of them, let's say, is falling on hard times, the other one, it's such a tremendous thing. But even when you see younger kids, and they're together, and they squabble, but the minute that one of them fall, the other one's there to pick them up. One of the beautiful pictures that I have is hiking and watching my kids at a distance, arm in arm. It's like, and what's the biggest sorrow? The biggest sorrow for a parent, above anything else, is to see their kids not getting along. It's a terrible thing. So, Bani Matem L'Hashem Elokechem. So what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you? Take care of each other. You're all brothers. You're all my sons, you're all brothers. Brothers and sisters, take care of each other. Worry about each other. The ones who are less fortunate, make sure to support them and bring them up. And then the Shalosh Regalim comes in, because what are the Shalosh Regalim all premised on? Hashem Berachacha. God gives you lots of produce. You come and celebrate with him. Make sure to include the poor in it. Make sure to include the disenfranchised. But understand that all of that blessing is because you're my family. And therefore, you're my family. You got to take care of each other. It's all tied in together. So the Lotit Godedu sort of becomes the springboard for this whole discussion. Is you're a sanctified nation. You should behave like dignified people, Rashi. You should trust that you have this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ibn Ezra. You should understand that no matter what happens, you still have that Sforno. Right? And you should make sure, the longer picture is, not just what it tells you not to do, which is not to act in a degrading way and not to lose it as if the whole world's crumbled around you when you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but don't forget, you also have the rest of Klal Yisrael. They also have the rest of Klal Yisrael, which, by the way, is something that plays out in a beautiful way when we are Menachem Avel. I'm going from here to the valley because Ruthie Teichman just came back this morning. She's sitting for one day. So what do we say when you're Menachem Avel? Her sister passed away. What do we say when Menachem Avel? What do we say? Kom Menachem Etchem. B'toch Sha'arei Tzion V'Shalayim. You're not alone. On the one hand, we're coming to your house because right now you're feeling the devastation. On the other hand, you're not alone. We're all mourners. We're all mourners for Yerushalayim, and we're now asking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has comforted us, will comfort you. And so, Banim Atem, Lo Tidgodedu, I'm going to add a sixth point. It's not just, don't cut yourself because you're holy. Don't cut yourself because you're noble. Don't cut yourself because you should trust that Hashem did for the best. Don't cut yourself because you still got the best relative around. Don't cut yourself because you may have just seen the death of a loved one in Irani Dachat, Chizkuni. But don't cut yourself because you still have Klal Yisrael with you. Because Banim Atem, you got a whole mishpacha out there, which is 12 million, 13 million strong, however many strong. And as a result of that, and that's the Am Kadosh. What makes you guys so special in such a family? The fact that you're Am Kadosh, that Hashem selected, and that you have this whole rigor of behavior that also defines you as a community. And that becomes, of course, a great measure of consolation in difficult times.